The Innocent, Chapter 1. Father and son sat in the car and waited. They didn't know what they were waiting for, the nerve, the strength to do what they now had to do. They didn't know how long it would take to find that strength of will. So they waited. The weather was mild in this part of the country, even though summer had already hit some of the states they'd been in recently with a vengeance. Despite the mildness of the day, the car's interior was still oppressive and uncomfortable. John looked at the building they were parked in front of. Not overly fancy, but it had a good reputation, and there had been other features that had made this place a good choice. It hadn't been easy, none of it, but he had been certain that it had been for the best. John's mind was on his last conversation with Missouri. Conversation hell. They had shouted, argued. She had made him feel worthless as a father, a failure. He was uncertain if that had been her intention, but she hadn't pulled any punches. The worst was that, in his bleakest moments, when he really thought about it, he knew she was right. "How long?" She had spoken the words as if she couldn't quite believe them. Last Christmas. It had been almost a whisper at that point, an admission of his guilt. "John Winchester, how could you do that to your boy? You know what family has always meant to him, and you haven't seen him in almost 6 months? Not even for his birthday?" "Missouri, I don't want to hear it. I didn't challenge your decision to leave him where you left him. I had no right. You're the parent. Although I have to say that you could hardly have chosen a more out-of-the-way place. Obviously no chance of just passing by or being in the neighborhood. But not to even make the effort? Since Christmas?" The silence between them had been thick, uncomfortable, and overpowering. Sam had been there, but had said nothing. John could guess whose side he was on. Her voice softened as she sighed. She almost looked defeated, almost. It took a lot to defeat a woman like Missouri Mosley, and John didn't think he had what it took. She looked up at him, and he was sure she was looking straight into his soul. "Tell me, John. If I told you that he was in danger, that he needed your help, would you make the effort to go and see him then?" That had been 4 days ago, and now here he was, sitting outside the care home that had been his eldest son's home for the better part of 4 years. The care home that received money off him every month without fail. Sam knew better than to question where the money came from. But never a letter or a note or a call for Dean. No contact since last Christmas, and that visit, he had to admit, had been the first in almost as many months. 4 years, and since Dean had been here, John had visited him exactly 9 times. Every time had been the same. Dean had been glad to see him. Dean had made a fuss when he tried to leave, been inconsolable. John's heart had broken a little more every time he'd said goodbye, every time Dean begged him not to leave him here again, alone. He'd spoken to the doctors, to Dean's doctor, Weinberg, and Dean was making steady progress. John didn't doubt the doctor's assessment. It was always true that whenever John did pay a visit, Dean had been walking better or talking better. Dean was being rehabilitated, and the doctor seemed proud of his achievements. Dean, according to Weinberg, should be able to function independently in the real world. But he didn't understand. Dean didn't live in the real world. Hadn't since he lost his mother. The world Dean lived in would never forgive any frailty or weakness. The world Dean lived in, he could never be rehabilitated enough to survive in, and so John had left him, here, where it was safe. But where he had to accept that his family would be strangers to him. Dean wasn't rehabilitated enough to understand that either. Sam had seen his brother a few more times than his father. In the beginning, he traveled up here often, but not for the last couple of years. For the last couple of years, he'd only made the trip when his father had. Sam's reluctance to see his brother had a lot to do with guilt, too, but not the guilt of a parent for failing to protect a child. His guilt was much more basic than that. He knew that he was completely responsible for what had happened to Dean. It had been his fault entirely. He had no doubt. If he hadn't been so distracted, so keyed up about trying to find a way to tell them he was leaving, so excited about the letter from Stanford, Dean wouldn't have had to save him. Dean got hurt trying to save him. That was the mantra he repeated all the time Dean had been in surgery, all the time he had been in the ICU, all the time he had been in a coma, and after, when Dean had woken up and hadn't been Dean anymore. Dean got hurt trying to save him. Sam didn't think Dean had actually succeeded in saving him. Not really. He hadn't left this life that he'd been desperate to escape. How could he have considered it after what had happened? He'd stayed with Dad. He'd been responsible for John Winchester losing one son. He would not be responsible for him losing another. He'd lived his life as if he was living it for Dean. Living Dean's life because Dean couldn't live it. Stanford was only a half-remembered dream now. What Sam wanted then, well, he didn't want any more. What he wanted now was to turn the clock back to when he was 17, to when he had seen the applications for college. He wanted to turn the clock back and not pick them up, not even consider it. Not think about a life away from his brother or his father. He'd been selfish, and Dean got hurt trying to save him. So they sat outside the hospital in the car that Dean used to love and waited. Waited to find the courage to see the son that had been failed and abandoned. Waited to find the courage to see the brother that was a pale imitation of the man he'd once been. The carer, the joker, the hunter. "Come on, Sam. We better go in and see him."